Sarom, dear listeners, and welcome once again to Vahini Satsang. And today we continue our journey through Sandeha Nivarini. In the last few episodes, we have been contemplating on chapter 8 of Sandeha Nivarini, the beautiful treatise that Bhagwan himself has written. And in this book, in this volume, which initially appeared as series of articles in Sanatana Sarathi, the monthly magazine way back in the late 50s and early 60s, Bhagwan, as a devotee, asks the questions, and he himself, as the divine master, answers those questions. Sandeha means doubt, Nivarini means the one who removes, to remove the doubt is Nivarini, and Sandeha Nivarini is that beautiful book which dispels all our doubts. And Bhagwan, the indweller of every person, is listening to the questions that are coming in the hearts of the devotees, and he himself is answering them. And we have been spending time ruminating, contemplating on these questions and answers for the last so many weeks. Today we move on to a new chapter, chapter 9 of Sandeha Nivarini. And as we discuss this chapter, like we have done in every chapter before, we have split this chapter into various segments for ease of our understanding and so that we can assimilate what Bhagwan has written in small doses. So let's listen to what Bhagwan has given us in segment 9.1 of Sandeha Nivarini, and then we will pray to him and seek his guidance to understand what he has written.
Oh, you have come. Well, what is the news?
What other news have we except yours? I heard that your Kerala tour was most pleasant and wonderful. I am sad I was not destined to join.
Why are you sad for it? Listen to the account and be happy, that is all. Have the confidence and the hope that when next such an opportunity presents itself, you may be able to join. Do not be brooding over the past.
What is the use of confidence and hope when one is not destined? Hope will only cause greater disappointment.
Has destiny a shape and a personality so that you can recognize it even before it shows itself? You should not hang on its favor, talking all the time of destiny, destiny. How can that destiny itself fructify without your will and wish taking practical form as action? Whatever be the destiny, it is essential to continue acting. Without the help of karma, destiny can never be attained.
If one is destined, everything will come of itself, isn't it?
That is a big mistake. If you sit quiet with the fruit in your hand, let the juice come into my mouth, if that is so destined, will it ever happen? It is sheer stupidity to complain that destiny denied you the juice without making the effort to squeeze and eat the fruit. Destiny gave the fruit in your hand. Karma can make you enjoy it. Without action, we cannot experience anything. Karma is the duty. Destiny is the result. Results cannot emerge without action.
So, Swami, we should not sit with folded hands placing all burdens on destiny, isn't it?
What is important is, you should act according to your capacity and leave the result of the action to destiny. it is wrong to desist from the appropriate karma, placing reliance on destiny. If you do so, even destiny will slip out of your hands. Whoever he be, he must engage himself in karma.
Yes, yes, Swami.
So the chapter begins by Bhagwan saying, okay, what is the news? And the devotee says, what other news have we except yours? And that is so true, isn't it? Which other news is more eagerly expected, awaited than the news about Bhagwan? In fact, that reminds me of the days when Bhagwan was in the physical form. And the students, the staff, and the devotees, everywhere, every day, your ears were pining to hear what happened today in the mandir. What happened today during bhajans? Because every day is new. Every day something beautiful happens. Every day something unexpected happens. Every day, you know, something incredible has happened somewhere with someone. Today Swami has taken a letter from this person. Day after he spoke to that person. The third day, he called the other person for interview who was waiting for 5 years. And the sixth day, Swami announced a new project. The seventh day, Swami making plans to go somewhere. On the ninth day, oh my God, Swami has already left. What is he doing? Whom has he taken? How are they spending the time with Swami? Isn't it? When is he going to come back? And when are we going to listen to those stories again? And when is he going to come to me? When can I do something? When can I read about him? When can I listen to that person's experience? When can I once again sit in the first line? When can I once again listen to him? When can I once again forget everything and just sit in front of him? And that is how the life of everyone was, whoever has had the opportunity of being with the physical form of Bhagwan. You forgot time, you forgot which day of the week it was, you forgot. Did you have your breakfast? If the darshan music started, if Swami has come, you just want to run and you forget about food, you forget about everything else. It doesn't matter whether it is Sunday, Monday, Tuesday. It doesn't matter if anybody else is talking to me or not. Doesn't matter if the other relative has come or not. Doesn't matter anything else is happening in your life. Because what other news is more important than the news about him? And that is what the Bhakta is telling. What other news have you except yours, Swami? I heard that your Kerala tour was most pleasant and wonderful, he says. In fact, in the earlier episode, I think 3-4 episodes prior to today's episode, there was a mention of this Kerala trip, wherein in the beginning of chapter 8 of Sandhya Nivarini, Swami says to the Bhakta, why have you come so early? And he says, Swami, I know you're going on your Kerala trip and I will miss you. I didn't want to miss this interaction with you. And before you go, I wanted to talk to you. And so that is how the chapter 8 begins. And chapter 9, Bhagwan has visited and Swami has come back. In fact, I did share in the earlier episode this trip of Bhagwan to Kerala, which happened in December 14, 1958. Till December 31st, 1958, Bhagwan went to Kerala and he was there at the invitation of the governor of Kerala, Sri Burgala Ramakrishna Rao, and Swami stopped at several places. On the way to Kerala, he went to Chennai, he went to Bangalore, he went to Mysuru, he went to Coimbatore, he went to Aluvai. And Bhagwan stayed in the Raj Bhavan in Kerala in Thiruvananthapuram on the 19th of December 1958, Swami spent the evening of 21st December in the beach, in the Kovalam beach. And I did share with you before how from the sands of this beach, Swami produced a sandalwood image of Lord Krishna and also a gold ring with the image of Radha and Krishna embossed on it. The devotees were blessed to drink Amrit, the divine ambrosia, trickling down from Bhagwan's fingers. Bhagwan blessed them with such blessed moments during that trip. Bhagwan went on the sand of the seashore of Cape Comorin. As Bhagwan walked on that beautiful sand, there were beautiful beads that formed under the foot, and these beads which automatically sprouted where he kept his foot were strung into a rosary, and Swami presented this to Swami Sadananda, who was Bhagwan's guest in this trip. I shared with you how Bhagwan materialized the lost nose ring of the goddess Kanyakumari. Bhagwan showed this jewel to all the devotees of his party, and after they had seen, Swami sent it back to where it came from. Bhagwan was in Tirunelveli on the 26th of December. Bhagwan, on the next day, 27th, went to Periyar Dam. Swami also went to Vedasandur. Swami also visited the house of Sri Ramaswamy Chettiar before he left for Chennai on the 31st of December. So this is how the Kerala trip happened in 1958. And from the mention of this in Sandhya Nivarani, we actually get clues of when Bhagwan wrote this. And we know, so Bhagwan gave us this gift of Sandhya Nivarani in the 1950s, in the late 1950s. So during 1958, Swami was writing both Prema Vahini as well as Sandhya Nivarani. And so this chapter 9 begins with the devotee saying, Swami, what news have I except yours? And your Kerala trip was so beautiful, Swami. And he says, Swami, I was sad. I was not destined to join. And well, everyone always want to be in every trip that Swami makes, and that is how it was whenever Bhagwan went out. You don't want to miss those moments. Those are historic moments. Those you know are going to be absolutely exceptional moments of being with Swami, whether Swami went to Badrinath or Somnath or Kanyakumari or Dwarka. I mean, it is really a fortune of many lifetimes to be with Bhagwan in these trips. And so the devotee, Bhagwan, knowing how the devotees feel, he himself has written and he's telling Swami, I am sad, I was not destined to join. This is how every devotee feels. And Swami says, why are you sad for it? Listen to the account and be happy. Swami says, why are you sad? Why are you sad that you were not part of the group? When you think about yourself, you will be sad. Swami says, you listen to the stories, listen to the Bhagavata, listen to what happened that time. Listen to the stories from the mouths of the devotees who were part of the trip. Listen to that, relive that, and be happy. Why are you sad? If we are sad, it means that we are thinking only about ourselves, isn't it? I'm thinking that I did not go, I did not get this chance. But if I think, wow, what a wonderful trip it would have been. Let me listen to all the lovely things that happened in this trip. And if I go and excitedly, and if I go and talk to all the people who are there in the trip, I can fill my ears with these lovely tales. And I can just look at Swami brimming with joy that, Swami, what a beautiful chapter chapter of Satya Sai Saga unfolded. And thank you, Swami. I heard all these stories. Thank you for giving us these precious moments through their eyes, through their expressions, through their voices, through their emotions. I too felt that joy. I too was so happy. If we have this kind of a perspective, I think Swami will be so happy. And that's why Swami is telling this devotee, why are you sad? Listen to the account. Listen to these stories. Listen to my glory. And be happy. What else can give us happiness? Nothing can give us that kind of fulfillment. Nothing can really give us that kind of a sense of fullness that only the stories of the divine give us, isn't it? Every other joy that you experience, along with that joy, there is also sorrow attached to it. Every other pleasure you experience, along with that pleasure, there is a little pain attached to it. Sometimes little pain, sometimes more pain, sometimes immediate pain, sometimes later pain. But I think listening to the stories of the Lord, contemplating on the Lord, these are the beautiful moments of pleasure, happiness, which have no sorrow attached to it. These are those kind of joys, which are pure joys. There is no sadness attached to it, because they are not associated with the world. Anything that is associated with the world will have both pain and gain. But anything that is associated with the divine is only gain, is only joy, is only permanent happiness. It is only bliss. And that is the reason why Bhagavan is telling, listen to the account and be happy. Don't be sad. And then Swami says, have the confidence and the hope that when next such an opportunity presents itself, you may be able to join. Have that positive attitude, have that hope, have that confidence that maybe next time you will get the chance. But for that, now you have to be joyful. You cannot be sorrowful now. I think God will be very happy if he sees that even though I did not take this person with me this time, but see how so happy he is. Even though I did not give him this chance this time, but see how joyous he is. He is not brooding. He is not complaining. He is not constantly feeling jealous of the person who went. He is not feeling depressed. He is happy. He is happy whatever came to him. And he is trying to drink that joy that is coming through others. Such a person perhaps needs my grace more. Such a person I should bless more, because he is going to share this joy more. Because this is a person who is a very good medium, very good conduit to share divine love with all, because he accepts everything and he is only looking at ways to fill his happiness and the happiness of all around him. He's deriving happiness from others' happiness. He is not thinking about only that thing that will happen to him so that he'll feel happy. He's able to feel happy for others. Such a person, I should bless more. I should give him more opportunities, because he will spread that happiness more. Perhaps God would be thinking like this. This is just a way of our understanding from what Bhagavan has written, because Swami is telling you, listen to the account and be happy, and you have the confidence that Swami will take you again whenever there is an opportunity. Next time when he's looking for people who will be part of the trip, Swami will consider you. For that you have the hope, you have the confidence, Swami is telling. Do not be brooding over the past, Swami says. And this is such an important line. Swami says, do not be brooding over the past. You cannot keep thinking, Swami did not take me. Swami went to Kerala. Swami did not take me. Swami went to Thiruvananthapuram. Swami went to Governor's Palace. I could have stayed in the Governor's Palace with Swami. I could have been there in Kanyakumari with Swami. I could have been there at the Kovalam Beach. I could have been there at the Periyar Dam. My God, Kerala. I have visited Kerala so many times. But it would have been so fantastic to be with Swami. Swami did not take me. We can go on thinking how depressing it is for me. How could Swami do this? You know, one can always go on thinking about the past and keep feeling very low. And that is what Swami is warning us against. Swami is telling, do not be brooding over the past. You have confidence and hope that next time you'll get an opportunity. Okay, you did not get this time. This is not the end of the world. Have that confidence that Swami will take you again. First, you be happy. You listen to what has happened, derive joy, and then have the positive attitude that maybe next time you will get this blessing. And the way Swami is telling, do not be brooding over the past, I feel is so significant. And this is something which, even though we know, even though so many of us theoretically are very aware that we should not be thinking about the past, but unknowingly, unconsciously, most of the time, most of our sorrows is because of thinking of the past, isn't it? If there is a free moment, we would think, oh, that did not happen, this did not happen, my son did not do this, my daughter did not do this, my spouse should have been like that, my spouse should have done like that. We constantly keep thinking of the past. If only I had got this done through my spouse, if only I had got that done through my child, we constantly keep thinking about the past. And that is what is the cause of most of our agonies and anxieties, isn't it? In a beautiful discourse that Bhagavan gave on 18th of April 1993 in Kodaikanal, Swami is telling, there is no use worrying about the past. The path that you have already traveled, why look at that path? Forget the past. It is past. Past is past. Swami says, also don't think about the future and build castles in the air because you are not sure of the future. Who has full faith that they will see tomorrow? Is there anyone who can say that they will see tomorrow? We never know. We never know. Life is so uncertain. We never know what is going to happen tomorrow. Swami says, there is no use thinking about tomorrow. Future is not sure, past is past. Don't brood over the future, don't brood over the past. Live in the present. This is omnipresent, Swami says. This is not an ordinary present. Swami says, the results of the past are in the present. Future results are also in the present. The seed sown earlier is a plant today. So what is the present is basically a plant. The seed was sown in the past. Had you not sown the seed earlier, last year, you would not have had the tree today. And the seed of the future is also present in the present tree. And the present tree will decide the seed for the future, Swami says. And that is the reason why the present tree is an omnipresent tree. It has both past and future seeds. The past seeds ensure that you have the present tree. And the present tree will provide the seeds for the future. Swami says, why are people grief-stricken today? Because they forget the present and they worry only about the past and the future. And why do they do this? Because of the mind. Mana eva manushyanam karanam bandhamokshayo. The mind is the cause of bondage and liberation for humanity. When Bhagavan always gives this example of the mind, Swami says, you put a lock on the door. To open the lock, you insert the key and turn it right, then the lock opens. But if you turn the key to the left, the same lock, the same key, but The lock gets locked if you turn it in the opposite direction. The only difference is turning. Are you turning it right or are you turning it left? And Swami says, the heart is the lock and mind is the key. If you turn God's side, you get detachment. You turn world side and you get attachment. Turn the mind towards God and you get liberation. Turn the mind towards the world and you get bondage. It's the mind that is responsible. Constantly thinking about the past or the future, it is because the mind is not turning the heart, which is the lock, in the right direction. It is turning it in the opposite way. And Swami says, what one has to do is individual practice, family practice and community practice. Individual practice, what is it? Is it chanting, meditation, japa, dhyana? Swami says, no, not these. These are not the individual practices I'm referring to. Individual practice is a full blossoming of the individuality of a person, Swami says. And how do you develop that? Swami says, you will develop that only when you don't take a narrow path. Only then will you have the full development of your personality. And what is personality in the first instance? Personality is not our muscles, our color, our height, our gait, our speech, our smile. Personality is the manifestation of the latent divinity of the individual, Swami says. It is not the body and the muscles and the height and the beard of a person that is the personality. Who is truly a person? Swami says, one who manifests their latent bliss is a person in the true sense of the term. When we talk about personality, Swami says the word persona, it comes from the word persona. Persona means divine, divine qualities within. So individual practice is to bring out these divine qualities that are there, the blossoming of these sacred qualities in us. And many people say that how can we do this living the world? We have so many things to do, so many responsibilities, so many things to achieve, so many duties in the family, in the society. We cannot really focus on all these things. That is where Swami says, the world is not an obstacle in the path of spirituality. You have to discharge your duty, discharge your responsibility, living in the world, but keeping your focus not on the world. Swami says, a housewife goes to the river, she cleans the vessel, fills it with water, and then as she returns, she keeps the vessel on her head and walks her way back. And even as she is walking back with the vessel on her head, she is conversing with the other woman. And her baby is there on her arms. She is conversing with the other woman. She is taking care of the baby whom she is holding in one hand. But all the same, on the head, she is having this pot of water and that is balanced. Even as she is doing so many things, taking care of the baby and conversing with other women, but her focus does not shift from balancing that pot on her head. Swami says, you may be a householder, you may be a student, you may be a businessman, whatever task you may be engaged in, keep your focus on your aim. keeping your focus on God, keeping your focus on Atma, keeping your focus on what is permanent. That is what is spirituality. Spirituality is not just meditation and japa and dhyana and all these rituals. If we can keep our mind focused on the Atma and derive that bliss from the heart, that is what is spirituality, Swami says. Once you have this focus, whatever you do, it will be sacred. It will be worthwhile. That's why Swami says you have to keep a watch on the mind, because the mind stands as an obstacle in everything, but you have to utilize the mind to turn it towards the God, towards the permanent. You have to tell the mind, hey, don't stand between God and me. I'm not interested in the world. My relationship with God is sacred. It's spiritual. Swami says you can cajole the mind, you can talk to the mind, you can pacify the mind and ensure that it does not distract you, it does not delude you. Swami gives the example from Ramayana. While walking in the forest, Rama, Lakshmana and Sita, they used to go in one file in the jungle. In the front would be Rama, followed by Sita, and finally it would be Lakshmana. Lakshmana would always follow Sita to protect her. Rama would lead the way, and Sita would follow Rama. And Swami says, at one point when Lakshmana wanted to see Rama, how can Lakshmana see Rama? He was not able to see because Sita was in between. And he cannot dare to overtake Sita, or he cannot get angry at Sita. If he gets angry at Sita, or if he tries to overtake Sita, definitely Rama will be upset with him. So what can he do? He can only pray to Mother Sita, Mother, can you please move a little so that I can see Rama? If he prays, Sita will be very happy to oblige. Then Rama also will be happy, Sita also will be happy, and Lakshmana also will be happy. Swami says, this is how we should deal with our mind. Sita is that illusion, that Maya. Rama is that Atma. And we, as the individual self, are like Lakshmanas. If we want to see God, that illusion, that Maya will come in between. So you don't have to hate it, you don't have to get angry with it, you don't have to get frustrated with it. Because that is part of God. Maya is part of God. Illusion is the vesture of God. All you have to do is just pray wholeheartedly. Either you pray to Rama, then Rama himself will ask Sita to move, or you pray to Sita. Then there will be no illusion. You will only see God. You can never overcome illusion through hatred, Swami says. You have to make friendship with illusion. With good words, if you request, illusion will move away. You pray to God, God will remove the illusion and you can see Him. Swami says, this is how we should live in the present and not brood over the past. In the present, if we can turn our mind to the right and ensure the mind is not deluded but directed towards the divine, that is the way we can escape from all these anxieties and sorrows and live up to what Bhagavan has said here. Do not brood over the past. Make use of the present. In fact, this is the month of November, and very soon we will be celebrating the New Year, and every time New Year comes, one is tempted to do two things. One, go down the memory lane, look at the tapestry of our life, how it has unfolded in the last few months, and you want to relive those moments of excitement and joy, and also those moments of sorrow and disappointment. You look at how life has evolved in the last few months or years. That's what we do on New Year. For someone, it could be how they finally managed to fulfill their ambition of starting a new company. Another got the opportunity to do their debut concert. A third might be thrilled as his child finally spoke in his so sweet voice. The fourth might have received his much awaited and rightfully due promotion or pay rise. The fifth might have realized his dream of working for, say, Swami's organization, the dream of doing some side project. Or it could also be the moment when someone was set back 5 years financially thanks to the schizophrenic stock market. The second might have missed the opportunity of a most promising career because of organizational politics. A third might not have gotten over the deep pain gnawing in his heart because of a relationship that has not worked. A fourth might have lost someone who is extra special in their life, and any amount of consolation and self-reconciliation doesn't help. A fifth would have turned completely topsy-turvy because their bundle of joy has now become the nest of a terrible bacteria or virus. We don't know. And New Year's are times when we stop, we pause, and we reflect at all the twist and turn of our life's journey. We feel elated, we feel depressed. Sometimes the moments of low are so disheartening and harrowing that they overpower our instances of happiness. We are unable to celebrate life, as they say, as many other people seem to be doing. Our life seems to be one full of one tragedy after another, but the neighbor next door seems to have had a reasonably comfortable and easy-going life. One evening, there were six people who were sitting in a restaurant, and they were relishing their evening cup of coffee during a weekend. One of them cracked a fantastic joke, and all of them burst out laughing. Encouraged by this nice response from everyone, so this man got up very enthusiastically and he said, "I'm going to tell you a joke." And he narrated the same joke. Now, of the six people, four people laughed. They expected that he will tell another joke, but actually it was the same joke, so obviously everyone did not find it so exciting. Four people still laughed. And so after some time, this entertainer, he got up again. He said, "Now I'm going to tell you a joke." And he begins the joke. And as the joke ends, people realize it is again the same joke. For the third time, he spinned the same funny tale. Obviously now, just two people, they didn't even laugh, they just smiled. Other people are getting frustrated. They're wondering, I mean, what is he trying to do? He's telling the same joke and expects us to laugh. How ridiculously funny this is. And they continue to eat, and a few minutes pass, and again this person got up. And he said, "I'm going to crack a joke." And now they thought, now at least he will tell a new joke. But he cracked exactly the same joke the fourth time. And now everyone was so frustrated listening to him narrate the same joke. One of them just gave a plastic smile. And Their weekend meeting carried on, and after some time, as if the man had not had enough, he got up once again and he said, "I am going to tell a joke." And the people were so frustrated, but somehow they thought at least now he will tell something again, something new. And man got up, he started the joke, and they thought it will change, but it did not change. He described the same reticular once again, and now everyone was so quiet. They didn't want to respond at all. Someone got so irritated, he said, "Why can't you tell something else?" And now this man said, "Why cannot you people laugh? I am narrating to you such a cracker of a joke." And the other people said, "What nonsense. What do you expect us to do? You have been saying the same boring tale again and again. You want us to laugh?" And the man then took a deep breath and he said, "Well, you are unable to laugh at the same joke more than once or twice, even though it's a good one. But all of you go over a hurt that has deeply pained you in your life over and over again. You relive it scores of times and continue to recreate those scars in your hearts repeatedly. You fill yourself with sorrow time and again. But if I tell you the same nice joke, you don't want to listen again. So whose acts are nonsensical? I am telling a good thing. Something that will make you happy. But you don't want to relive. But every time you go on reliving something which depresses you, who is stupid?" All of us love to live in our past to some extent or the other, isn't it? Often we never let go of our past and see the present through the viewfinder of the past. And perhaps this is precisely what stops us from living life fully in glee and joy. And that is the reason why Swami is telling you, do not brood over the past. Past is past. Forget the past. Future is uncertain. They say we lose our health always busy with making money. And later, lose all our money in taking care of our health. We are so busy earning our livelihood, our promotion, our savings, that we compromise so much on our health, on our well-being, and later on whatever we have earned just drains away like water when our health takes a beating. By thinking too much about what the future will offer, we forget the present. And so what happens? We live neither in the present nor in the future. We live in the past, which is of no use. Living life always in the fast lane, seldom do we pause to reflect and relish the simple joys of life. We do not have time to appreciate the glory of God through a beautiful sunrise. We don't have time to see God in action as He works within us. God is always working within us. He is beating our heart. He is digesting our food silently every time we put something into our stomach. We don't have time to see the smile of an innocent child. We don't have time to appreciate the serving nature of a saintly soul or the unconditional love of a poor mother. Our life is always in the fast lane. We are immersed with our plans of our grand future. We almost think that we are never going to die. As they say, we live as if we are never going to die, and we die as though we have never lived. What we forget is how much ever we may plan, what will pan out in our life in the end is what He has designed. How many of our plans actually take shape the way we had envisaged? And how foolish we have been thinking that we can take charge of our lives. You can act, but the consequences, the results are not in our hand. And it is for this reason that Swami is telling, the more you accept, the more you are grateful, the better the things are going to be in your life in the days ahead. Because future is uncertain. That is the reason why do not live in the past, do not live in the future. And this is what Swami is telling this bhakta. Do not brood over the past. And because Swami tells him that have the confidence that maybe next time you will get the opportunity to go with Bhagavan, then the bhakta is telling, what is the use of confidence and hope when one is not destined? If I hope for it, hope will only cause greater disappointment. That's something interesting, isn't it? Many times we feel, look, what is the point? Why should I even hope? Because I know this is beyond me. It is not going to happen. Swami is not going to talk to me. He's not going to do this for me. Yeah, I did not get this opportunity this time to be a part of this program. But why should I hope that it will happen next time? Because I don't think it is going to happen. If I hope, and then I will be disappointed. I don't want to have any such feeling. Bhagavan says, has destiny a shape and a personality so that you can recognize it even before it shows itself? Why do you imagine? Why do you overthink? Swami says, you should not hang on its favor. Don't take the side of destiny. How can destiny itself fructify without your will and wish? And your will and wish for their fructification need action. Whatever be the destiny, Swami says, it is essential to continue acting. Karma has to be done. Even to attain one's destiny, karma has to be done. Swami says. The bhakta says, Swami, if one is destined, everything will come of itself, isn't it? If we are destined that this is what is going to happen, if this is what is written in my hand, if this is what is there in my fate, then that is what is going to happen. So how important it is for me to act anyway, whatever is decided only will happen. Swami says, this is a big mistake. If you sit quietly with the fruit in your hand, hoping that its juice will reach the mouth, will that happen? Swami says, it is sheer stupidity to complain that destiny denied you the juice when you didn't put the effort to squeeze the juice, squeeze the fruit. Destiny gave the fruit into your hand, but it is action that can make you enjoy the fruit. Karma is that duty. The result of karma is the destiny. Swami says, destiny is what you create. And results cannot happen without action. So the bhakta says, so Swami, we should not sit with folded hands placing all the burdens on destiny, isn't it? Swami says, listen to me. You should never underestimate your powers. Forget what has been destined. Don't underestimate what can happen with your action. Engage yourself with action, with that power, knowing that you can change anything, even if something is destined. First you act. Act without any reservations, without any conditions, without any overthinking. Do your best. It is wrong to desist from the appropriate karma, placing reliance on destiny, Swami says. If you do so, even destiny will slip out of your hands, Swami says. Even if whatever is destined for you, if you don't act now, even what was supposed to perhaps happen, that also will not happen. Because you're not acting. As simple as whatever you're supposed to do in the present, do it without thinking about what the results are going to be. That is not in your hands and that is none of your business. You have to ensure that you make proper use of the time in the present. Every second should be used to do purposeful action. Every second should be used in doing actions that becomes beautiful seeds for future. In fact, in a New Year message in 1991, Bhagwan said, sanctify the New Year by engaging yourself in pure, selfless and ennobling activities. As far as possible, avoid causing harm or pain to others. As you sow, so you reap. Whenever you feel disturbed by a sense of anger, envy, pride, jealousy and the like, be alert and resort to the contemplation of God. If we strive to purify our present by divinizing our life through the practice of unconditional love and selfless service, does not matter to whatever extent it may be, then not only will our present be well spent, it will also take care of our past, because we will be able to deal with the consequences of our past in a much better way. We will be able to even erase some of the unpleasant consequences of our past if we act now well. And of course, we will be creating a beautiful future. And that is the reason why Swami says, the power of the present is immense. Let us harness this. We have to let go of our past. We have to create for ourselves a life where every moment is spent doing every act as an offering to Him. Whether we are singing bhajans, whether we are doing any seva, whether we are working in the office, whether we are doing domestic chores, or we are serving the homeless during the weekend. Every chapter of our life should have the header, for God I live, and the footer, to God I dedicate. For God I live, to God I dedicate. As I wake up in the morning, for God I live. As I sleep in the night, to God I dedicate. If this becomes our attitude, then, as Bhagwan says, you will be leading a joyful life. It won't be a grief-stricken life, and you would not be brooding over the past, but you would be creating a beautiful future for yourself. So, in this first part of segment 9.1, Bhagwan is first telling this devotee, do not brood over the past. Have the confidence that next time maybe such an opportunity comes, you will get this blessing of being with Bhagwan. Don't think that if everything is destined, what will I do? What's the point of me acting? Everything is there in your action. This is what Bhagwan has emphasized in this, and that is what we should be constantly keeping our focus on. Bhagwan further goes on in this chapter with very beautiful directions about how we should lead our life, what kind of acts we should do, and we'll come to that in the coming episodes of Vahini Satsang. Dear listeners, if you have time, do open the pages of Sandhya Nivarini, and as you read them, contemplate on them. If you get new insights, or if you have your own experiences of practicing these teachings in your life, please feel free to share with us. As always, you can write to listener@radiosai.org. You can also WhatsApp on our number, WhatsApp number 9393258258. It's a journey. We are doing it together. We look forward to your comments, to your suggestions, and to your experiences as we walk on this beautiful journey of swimming and diving through the beautiful nuggets of Silent Teacher. Thank you so much. Sai Ram.